Good evening, everyone.
Good evening.
At this time, we will call this meeting into order. We'll now have a welcome and roll call by the clerk of the board, please.
Chair Corey Ballance.
Present.
Vice Chair Lewis Hoggard.
Here.
Commissioner Ronald Robertson.
Present.
Commissioner Vivian Saunders.
Present.
Commissioner Michael White.
Present.
County Manager Juan Vaughn.
Present.
Attorney Jonathan Huddleston.
Present.
Chairman, okay. We have a quorum.
All right. Thank you so much. At this time, we'll have our invocation and pledge of allegiance by Commissioner Ross.
Our Father, we thank you for this day and all blessings and stores. My heart cries out for unity, Berkeley County, and all over the world. In your name, we thank you again for all your blessings. Amen.
Amen.
Join me with the pledge, please. Pledge to lead us to the flag of the United States of America, to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you.
Thanks, Commissioner Ross.
Welcome, Chairman.
At this time, we'll move forward with our public comments. Ladies and gentlemen, I would like to remind you that we ask that you please be aware that public comments are limited to 3 minutes. Your colleague there, Commissioner White, loves to time you.
I've got you.
So at this time, we will open the floor for public comments.
We have Laura O'Sean.
Thank you all for hearing me. My name is Laura Orsini, relatively new to Berkeley County, and I have a question, perhaps a suggestion. Besides the calendar for the commissioner meetings, is there a county calendar? And if there is not, can we create one? Because we keep seeming to run into duplicate events on the same day, and I think if there were a calendar, that might be prevented. We had an event on Saturday. We had Riverfest, we had the Hope Yard Sale, and we had the Berkeley County Prom all on the same day. We are a small enough county that I think probably we could spread those out and not step on each other. And the same thing is coming up June 21st. We have Make Music Day, which is an international event that's been going on for years and years, although this is our second year participating, and it's butting up against Juneteenth. So just a question, suggestion.
Thank you. I think it's a really great idea.
I mean, I volunteer to staff it, to keep it up, whatever we need to do to keep, so that we can stop just colliding with each other.
I know as far as the Juneteenth and the, I believe it's a musical or some kind of music, I'm aware that it clashes because I experienced it on last year. But I don't see how that will be able to change because both of them fall at the same time every year, it appears.
Well, it's possible, but the other thing is space, is the location. Right now, they are literally like around the corner from each other. So we, but the other piece of the Make Music Day is it's countywide. So there are things happening throughout the entire county. There's stuff in Allander, there's stuff in at the beach, there's, you know, in a lot of different places. Where we're really colliding is right here in town. So I understand that we can't move dates, but when we could pay attention to what's happening, we could probably be in better communication with each other.
As far as calendar, is the calendar made public?
So from my understanding, years before I was here, at one point there was one, and of course we have a county calendar. Only thing is just basically for county events. So it would just take some coordinating with the county and the municipalities and all the other agencies just to make sure that all the events made it to the calendar.
Exactly.
Otherwise, we'd still be in the same place.
Exactly.
So, Lewis Hoggard, the chamber president as well, and the mayor of Winston.
Yeah, I will take it to them too. But y'all were, I thought of the idea today because we had a conversation about today and I asked when the next meeting was and they said now. So I'm here.
And you're
so,
with the Arts Council.
I was with the Arts Council. I'm chairing Make Music Day. Okay. Now I'm the chair of Make Music Day. So that's it. That's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you so much. At this time, we would like to just make a slight change to the agenda. Summit Solar, Mr. Tom Terrell, attorney for EDF Renewables, would like to be added. And I need a motion on the floor to make him number 8 under our reports and appointments.
So that was, Chairman, that we include the attorney Tom Terrell to attend number 8.
And this will be done under statute 115D-12, Article 12. I will have a motion on the floor. Do we have a second?
Second.
Motion on the floor by Commissioner Robinson, second by Commissioner White. All in favor, let it be known by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, nay. Mr. Tom, you will be at number 8. At this time, we will move forward with our reports and appointments, starting with the convening. Convening as the Board of Equalization and Revenue. I'm sorry, I said review.
So we need a motion from the board. I move we go into the to convene as the Board of Equalization and Review.
Second. We have a motion by Commissioner White, second by Commissioner Hawley. All in favor, let it be known by saying aye.
Aye.
No opposed, nay. Number 1.
And Jody should be on the line. Jody, are you there?
Yep.
Okay.
Commissioner Ballas, I'm here.
Good. Good to hear you, Jody.
Good. We have no appeal that I'm aware of at this time.
Okay. No appeal at this time?
No appeal, so we can adjourn for the current year.
All right. Now make a motion we adjourn as the Board of Equalization and Review.
Second. We have a motion to adjourn to coming from Commissioner White, second by Commissioner Robson. All in favor, let me know by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, nay. All right, number 2, introduction of the Assistant Finance Director, Joseph Wallace, by Mr. William McCown.
Good evening. During last year's budget, you granted the Finance Department a new position as the Assistant Finance Director. Step forward, sir. I'd like to introduce Mr. Joseph Wallace. He comes to us from Mount Airy to Williamston. He worked with the credit union over in Williamston. His fiance's grandparents are from?
Up in the Coleraine area.
All right. He has ties to the county. And if you want to grill him, I'll step back and let you have him.
Thank y'all. Happy to be here. Thank you for the introduction. All right.
Anything you would like to say?
Any questions?
Not at this time. Like I said, happy to be here. Something will come up, I'm sure. But for today and right now, just here to observe and
that's smart.
Say hey there.
Yes, y'all. I can already tell.
Thank you.
At this time, we welcome you again and thank you for coming on board with us. Now we have an update of the Restore Hope Plantation activities by How you doing, sir?
Well, thank you. Commissioner White, will you raise your hand when I have about 15 seconds left?
Or no, 30? You've actually had the floor. You don't have 3 minutes because you're on the agenda.
Oh.
But don't take 15
then, Mr. Sherman. Well, I have worked hard on it. I will keep this within a shortened period, so thank you. Thank you for Mr. Chairman, for allowing me to speak on behalf of Historic Hope Foundation, and thanks to all the commissioners for the support that you have provided Historic Hope through the years. We're the only nationally and internationally recognized tourist venue in Bertie County. In a typical year, we have visitors from 30 states, 5 to 10 foreign countries. We have, just before COVID, we had visitors from all 50 states. And most of these visitors would not have come to Bertie County if it hadn't been to see Historic Hope. We have 4,000 followers on Facebook and another 250 on Instagram. And these are many historic sites, not only throughout this country, but as well as throughout the world. When visitors first come into Historic Hope, they're told about our tricultural heritage that shaped Bertie County in the 17th and 18th centuries and still shapes Bertie County today. All Bertie County students are admitted to Historic Hope free of charge. On Wednesday, we are hosting 3 classes from Bertie High School with the Living History Day programs. We are a Blue Star Museum, and so all servicemen, as well as National Guard, active National Guard men and their families are admitted free of charge. We have activities and programs for all the citizens of Bertie County. 10 to 20 people walk Hope Heights Road and our trails. We have 3.2 miles of trails every day. We have picnic grounds that are used by a group number of different people. We had two Easter egg hunts just last month. Excuse me. And we had our annual yard sale last weekend, and we had about 350 people there and 27 vendors. And of course, Christmas Open House is a really big program for us. We have typically 300 to 400 people. One year we had 600 people. And an interesting comment that we hear almost every year is that we didn't realize Bertie County had anything like this, which makes us feel good, I guess, in that respect, because I think we have a lot to offer. Our programs begin in February with our Black History Month celebration. And we were the first historic site to offer a Black History Month program. And this was our 31st annual Black History Month program this year. We have a lecture series that's based on the arts, a family history and genealogy workshop in July. This attracts people from as far away as California, Chicago, New York, various places that are coming to Bertie County to trace their heritage. And a program we started several years ago is our Haunted Forest, and this is for kids of all ages, from 4 or 5 years old to 40, 50 years old, in which we have stations set up in the forest behind Historic Hope's main building, in which we have all sorts of scary things that jump out and scare the people as they go through. We lost all of our state support in 2006. Prior to that, we had a part-time administrator as well as a secretary provided that. We have, as a consequence, we've reduced our staff. We reduced the hours and days on the days and hours that we are open. And we continue to do that to meet budget shortfalls. There are some expenses that our income is flat. And we have increasing expenses, particularly utilities, insurance. Collectively, they account for almost 40% of our budget. We rely on grants, donations, and memberships, rentals. We have a wedding this weekend. And we have some investments that we are able to get centered. We are very concerned about, of course, the stock market and what's happening as far as our investments go, but they've been managed for some time. I could keep talking, Michael, but I'm going to stop at that point. I hope I was within my 3-minute time, and I would be glad to answer any questions that any of the commissioners have. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir. At this time, we'll have a presentation of the JCPC funding plan by Mr. David Miller.
Good afternoon. I'm not David, I'm Annie. I just wanted to come and on behalf of the Bertie County JCPC to introduce myself as the new chair for the Bertie JCPC, since Ms. Laurie Cherry has stepped down, and so I'm now the new chair. So David is here. He's our area consultant, and he's going to share with you about the funding for Bertie County JCPC.
So good evening, everyone. I just wanted to introduce myself, and first off, thank you for the support for our Juvenile Crime Prevention Council here in Bertie County. I am the JCPC consultant for the district, and we are submitting, you should have received a packet of our plans for the 25-26 year. We expect the same amount of funding, $110,000 from the state, and we've got the same programs that we're recommending funding for. It's Methodist Home for Children's Vocational Education Program, Bertie County's Conflict Resolution Teen Court Program, and we have the Children Matters, which is United Services Youth's Interpersonal Skill Building Program. And I can run through the actual funding breakdown, and all of those are roughly the same as last year, the 24-25 year. It's Methodist Home is looking to get $31,000 of just DPS JCPC funds. The Teen Court Program is at $24,000. Children Matters, the funding committee recommended they get $49,000. They actually run two programs. It's an interpersonal skill building and a community service restitution program. And then for our admin, we have $6,000 just for the JCPC's admin cost.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
So on the funding sheet that you gave us, what's the difference between the county cash match and the local cash match?
So the only one, Methodist Home for Children, wanted to show a little bit further of some of their spending, and so that's why they expanded with the local match, but the county cash is all that the county would be responsible for.
So the local cash and the local in-kind is not us at all?
That's right. Okay. That's the actual program.
Gotcha.
Okay. The $6,000 that the county fund, the program JCPC, is also for the return we get from the state.
Right.
You get over $100,000 back from the state. The $6,000, I'll take it in.
And we've got some great running programs. They were fully monitored this past year. All came back with flying colors, so no issues there.
So just curious, that's what Ms. Saunders and I were just talking about. The only thing the county pays for is the $10,400?
Correct.
Just make sure I'm reading that right.
Correct. Okay.
Mr. Nolan, we applaud you. Thank you for all the program goods for the county. Surrounding area.
Thank you so much.
And congratulations, Ms. Wilson, for being the new chair.
That's right. Thank you all so much.
Thank you.
See you soon.
All right. Chairman. I think we need a motion to approve the appointed members for fiscal year 25-26. That's it right along, right after the funding plan. I see that right after the funding plan, there's a list of
appointments.
Yes.
Okay. Do we need to appoint somebody as well? I mean, not tonight, but it's got a vacant spot up there in the 26.
It's fine if one remains vacant, unless we get a turn, but yes.
I'm sorry.
It's fine if one remains vacant like that.
Well, I got a county commissioner I wanted to appoint to.
Well, we can.
And then the 12 and 13, the people under 21, do we need to find somebody for that as well? That's number 12 and 13. I mean, I'm not going to nominate anybody, but your number one person here should be able to find somebody easily.
Yes, sir.
And I was going, Ms. Vivian Saunders, do you want to serve on the JCPC board?
Sure.
There you go. I was going to nominate Ms. Vivian Saunders. Then you can approve all of them. Who else would?
Chance look over. That being said, I make that motion.
Second.
All right, we have a motion on the floor to accept the appointees by Commissioner Vice Chair Hogan, seconded by Commissioner Robinson. All in favor, let it be known by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, nay. We will now have the presentation of the educational update of Roanoke Smart Community College by Dr. Murray. How are you doing, Dr. Lewis? Good to see you.
Doing well, Mr. Chairman. How are you? Okay, good evening, Commissioners, and thank you for this opportunity to be able to provide an update on the Roanoke Shawan Community College. And this will be a three-year update, and there will be some parts of this presentation that will focus on the college in general, and then there were some that will specifically focus on Bertie County students. At Roanoke Shawan Community College, we deeply value the partnership that we have with Bertie County, and over the last 3 years, we have been able to serve over 1,200 students from Bertie County at the community college. As you can see, the numbers are broken down by unduplicated headcount for Bertie County. We have served 325 curriculum students, 857 continuing education students, and 52 college and career readiness students. The duplicated numbers at the bottom simply mean that when the students came, they loved us so much they came back another semester. A couple of highlights over the last 3 years is that our basic skills enrollment has increased by almost 7%, and our continuing education enrollment has increased by over 18%. And so that's good, because those are people who are being able to go directly to the workforce. So we're excited about those numbers. We have a couple of student spotlights. Mr. Marquis Watford is from Bertie County, and he graduated. You see him in his regalia. He graduated on Friday night at our commencement, and Marquis was our SGA president and a student ambassador, so we were very proud of him. He made it all the way to the regionals for the state student of the year, and so we were extremely proud of that, because that is the first time in Roanoke Shawan's history that we have had a student to make it to the regionals for the state student. So we were proud of him for that. And then Ms. J. Jean Bazemore, another Bertie County resident, she graduated on Friday night, and she was also one of our student ambassadors. And so we're very proud of both of them and what they were able to accomplish. These are some of our overall numbers that we've had over the last 3 years with basic skills. And basic skills are those students who were, for whatever reason, weren't able to complete a high school diploma on time, but they came back later in life to complete it. We've increased that percentage by 17% over the last 3 years. And as you can see, our enrollment is based on not headcount, but on FTE, full-time equivalency. And that number for college and career readiness had increased by 200%. We are very excited this year. That number of 30 is right now is sitting at 88. And that is the first time we've had 88 FTEs since 2014, over 10 years. So the director that we have right now, she is really working very hard to get those numbers up, and we're very proud of what those students are doing. Overall, our enrollment increased from the previous year by 19.39%. And so we're excited that Roanoke Shawan Community College is continuing to grow. For our curriculum students, all 58 colleges have to meet 7 performance measures. The performance measures are listed above. One of the things that I want you to take note of is that over the last 3 years, Roanoke Shawan has increased in all 7 of the areas. And so we're excited, because that means that when the students come to us, they're able to accomplish the goals that they wanted to accomplish. And one of the things that was outstanding for us this past year is that we were number 1 in the state out of all 58 colleges for curriculum completions, and we placed 2nd place in 4 of the other areas: transfer performance, first year progression, credit English success and credit math success. And Roanoke Shawan Community College was the only community college that exceeded the state standards in 5 of the 7 performance measures. So we're very proud of our students and the hard work that they're doing. This is a breakdown to show you specifically what Bertie County students have been doing. In FY22, credit English success, credit math success, those were the highest that they've done over the last 3 years, as well as first year progression. But what I want, not first year progression, just the credit English and credit math. But what I want you to take note of is on first year progression, if you look at Roanoke Shawan's numbers and Bertie's numbers, you will notice that over the 3 year period, Bertie students exceeded Roanoke Shawan's overall percentages for first year progression. That means that those students were progressing at a much higher rate than the institution as a whole. On the curriculum completions, you will see that Bertie County had a 68% rate back in 2023. That was the highest over the 3 year period. But I think what's most outstanding is what we can see with transfer performance. Each year, 22, 23, and 24, Bertie County students exceeded Roanoke Shawan Community College students for transfer rates. That means that those students who wanted to transfer to a four-year institution or went directly to the workplace, they were able to do that. And you see, for two years, that rate was 100%. So we're excited about what's happening with Bertie County students. For our curriculum students overall, we increased our enrollment by 33%. Our students are not only exceeding at the state level, but they're also exceeding at national levels. IPES is some of our national student data. And what that shows is that over the 3 year period, our graduation rate increased by almost 200%. And our retention rate increased by almost 38%. So our students are exceeding at the state level and the national level. Continuing education students over the 3 year period, enrollment has increased by over 100%. So you can see that in all three areas, our enrollment continues to grow. And so overall in the 3 year period from 21 to 24, our enrollment increased by over 53%. Not only are our students doing great things, but our faculty and staff are also doing great things. We signed an MOU with Martin Community College for our nursing program. So we're working together as two community colleges to put more nurses out in the field. And we're happy to report that this year we had 10 new nurses to go out into the field this year. So that's a win for both Martin Community College and Roanoke Shawan Community College. Our passage rate was 100% for the nursing program, so we're excited about that. Some of the things that we've been able to do over the last 3 years, most notably was we were able to get reaffirmed with our accrediting agency with no recommendations. So I'm sure you all remember this season where Roanoke Shawan Community College was on probation, but hey, tide has turned now. So we're happy about that as well. We built a new strategic plan as well as a new facilities master plan. Some of the things that our faculty and staff have done, we secured $15 million to build a new health sciences building. So we're excited about that going up. We've also secured funding for several of our academic programs, our welding program. We have a partnership with Newport News Shipyard to produce 100 welders, and we've already exceeded that for them. We have also gotten money from seed grant funds to expand our welding program. So we got over $750,000 to expand the welding program. We also received funding from Golden Leaf. And some of that work for those funds actually happens in Lewiston at the Vitality Center, so we're excited about that as well. We received two grants, healthcare grants from our system office, one to start an LPN program for $500,000, and then another one to expand our EMT program. And one of the things we did with that funding for the EMT program was we bought a new ambulance so that the students could learn on a machine that was more up to date than the one we previously had. These next three slides focus on our overall enrollment versus our budget. And as you can see on the enrollment side, we have our enrollment divided basically in four charts. Hertford County, of course, is our largest service, largest area within our service area. And in 22, 44% of our enrollment came from Hertford County. 21% came from Bertie County, 13% from Northampton County. And then we have this other group of counties that's not in our service area where we also get students from. And you can see that was 22%. On the right side, what you will see is what we receive from each of our counties for our budget. In 23, 91% of our budget came from Hertford County. 5% came from Northampton, and 4% came from Bertie County. The next year, Bertie County's enrollment stayed about the same. 21% of our students came from Bertie County, and the funding level stayed the same at 4% as well. That year, Hertford County covered 88% of the budget. And this is last year. As you can see, Hertford County's enrollment increased and went up to 53%. And that's the first time in the last 3 years that over 50% of our enrollment is coming from Hertford County. But as you also notice, there was a drop with Bertie County. Now only 17% of our enrollment is coming from Bertie County. Our funding is staying the same at 4%. So what we're coming tonight to ask is if the commissioners would consider increasing the amount of funding that we receive. We ideally, we would like to have the percentage of funding we receive on our budget to equal that of the enrollment. If we look at that scenario, our budget request for 26 from our three county service area is roughly $1.9 million. 17% of that would be $237,836. If we look back historically, we haven't been receiving that amount from Bertie County. But as you can see, we are serving the students in Bertie County. So, of course, we're going to be grateful for whatever we get. But if it's possible for an increase this year, we would really appreciate it, and our students would appreciate it. And then the last thing is we have a foundation. And we're asking each one of our counties that we serve to contribute to our foundation. We have students who come to us homeless and hungry. I cannot tell you how many of our employees take money out of their pockets every day to ensure that students are eating. So what we're asking is if Bertie County can afford to do it, to set aside funding for the foundation. You can call it the Bertie County Scholarship. You can call it anything that you want. You can designate that the funds only be used for Bertie County students. It's your money, and you get to decide how the funding is used. We're just asking each county to help us support the students that we serve by asking each county to donate to the foundation. And we're asking for a minimum of $25,000 from each county. And that is my presentation. Are there any questions for me?
Any questions from the board?
Or comments?
I'd just like to say thank you for the presentation. Very, very good information. Also, I can't help but to on the horn for my key. There's one of the ushers at my church.
Oh, okay.
And, but I thank you for all that you do for
Community College, as well as students here from Bertie County. That was a great presentation.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Thank you,
Commissioners.
All right. At this time, we will have a presentation of the 2024 trillion annual report. Ms. Bybee. Good to see you, Ms. Bybee.
Good to see you, too. Good evening, Commissioners. And I think IT magic is just going to make my presentation appear. And there it goes. All right. Thank you for allowing me to come and share our annual update with you. My name is Bobbie Lowe. I'm the Regional Vice President with Trillium Health Resources. So I'm just going to share some information and let you know what's been going on this past year. Oops. All right. So this is our new map. For those of you who have been around for a while, you can see our map has greatly grown. Trillium now works in 46 counties in North Carolina. This has been very interesting for me. I've been here for a while and I've always said Eastern North Carolina, and I can't say that anymore. We cover the East Coast and go up to Guilford County. There are four tailored plans in North Carolina. Trillium is the largest of the four in terms of county, but we are not in terms of population. We have big areas like Guilford and New Hanover, but we have Hyde and, you know, in Terrell County and Washington. We also have a lot of rural counties. As we have grown, and we've grown a lot, a whole lot. If you've been in our system for a while, you've seen us go from 5 counties to 14 to 19 to 24 to 28 to 46. I used to name them all. I can't do that anymore. Not with 46. It's always been really important that we keep our local connections. We are a public agency. We are a public health plan. One unique thing is we very likely, and I used to know for sure, but we almost certainly have staff who live in all of our counties. We have staff who live in Bertie. We have folks who live in Hyde County. You name it, we've got people there. So these are our communities as well. Something we've done to keep things local is operate regionally. We used to have 3 regions, now we have 5 regions. Bertie County falls in our northern region. With our most recent consolidation with East Point and Sand Hills, Warren County joined our northern region. So the region that Bertie County is in, it goes from Warren County all the way to Currituck County. We have 12 counties. I work in the northern region, I'm the northern regional vice president. We have the most counties, but we also have the smallest population because a lot of the counties in my area are our rural counties, which is where I'm from too. So each of our regions has a regional advisory board that's made up of folks from all the counties. We have a consumer and family advisory council that's made up of people with lived experience or their family members. Our governing board is made up of people from our regional boards and our consumer and family advisory councils. Each region has your regional vice president. We have community engagement staff. And we also have a community liaison who works directly in your county. We work really hard to have active stakeholder engagement, to participate in local things in your community. I think we just had one of our liaisons was in Powellsville Saturday at an event at a church. You know, just to try to share information and be out there. I wonder how to work this one day. So these are just some contacts for Bertie. So the representatives at the commissioners that you all have appointed to our regional advisory board is Dr. Patricia Wesson. And then we have Ms. Emmy Lou Taylor, and they represent Bertie County on our regional advisory board. For our CFAC, we actually do have a member from Bertie County, Ms. Paula. She's a family member who serves on our Consumer and Family Advisory Council. And I'm your regional vice president. Mr. Austin, Terrell Austin, he works with our community engagement. And then our community liaison coordinator is Ms. Shanita Vaughn. She's worked in this area for many years, and you see her out in your community probably frequently. So for people who have actually received services, I usually give you the fiscal year from July to June. But since we rolled out the tailored plan last year, I wanted to show you those numbers from tailored plan, because that's a huge shift in the Medicaid system. So these numbers just run from July until December. Within our 46 counties, 80,000 people received services. The majority of those were for mental health. There was also some substance use and developmental disabilities. That came to about $802 million of behavioral health services provided to folks in North Carolina, not Eastern, in our 46 counties in North Carolina. Just a couple updates with that. We rolled out that tailored plan. We learned a lot of lessons. Our phone volume increased by about 25%. It went crazy. So we had to really staff up all of our phone lines. We had to do a lot of work working with transportation vendors, because with tailored plan, we took on that non-emergency Medicaid transportation. So that was different for us. We also had to do a lot of work with providers to extend some flexibilities to make sure that people were able to continue to receive services without disruptions. We continue to manage that care for people who have the highest level of needs with Medicaid. But for most people who have Medicaid in North Carolina, their health care is now managed by one of the private insurance companies that manages standard plans. So most people either have Blue Cross, AmeriHealth, United, or WellCare, and that's actually who's managing their behavioral health care and their physical health care. The group that we manage are people who have the higher level of need. This is just a refresher on that process. I know y'all heard tailored plan. You heard it from my predecessor, Mr. Baker. You heard it from me for the past 2 years. But this is kind of how that time frame went. The first part of Medicaid transformation was rolling out those standard plans. That happened in July of 2021. The tailored plan rolled out eventually in July of last year, July of 2024. And the next big Medicaid transformation will actually take place next December. And that's when children in foster care will move under Blue Cross to manage their behavioral health care services for those children who have Medicaid. When I talk about the numbers, let me show you just Bertie. For Bertie County specifically, when we talk about the breakdown of people receiving different kinds of management from Medicaid, just to give you a number, for people who are on tailored plan, who are managed by us in Bertie County, it's 491 people. Everyone else who has Medicaid is managed by one of those private insurance companies. Your Medicaid direct population, we probably have about 50% of those that were able to manage their care. The rest of it's typically done through Medicare if they have dual insurances. But this is just kind of show you what that actually looks like. When we did our expansion, the consolidation last year, we did town halls. We did 18 town halls in our 18 new counties, and we learned a lot. But one thing we also learned was we haven't done this here in a while. So we're going to start doing some town halls in our original counties to try to get community feedback, community response, just to learn what's going on. So keep an eye out for that. We're getting ready to start planning those, and we'll be doing those here in this region too. Okay, this is the fun part. So I like to give some updates on some projects. So we are a public agency. When we have any additional funds or funds available, we try to do reinvestments in our communities. So just a couple of things we've done that have happened around Bertie County or the surrounding area. We always do Narcan kits. So we donate naloxone to your sheriff, EMS, to make sure they have that available. We have a mobile clinic that actually serves Bertie. They've set up, I think they're still at DSS. You can actually go to the unit in the parking lot and receive behavioral health care services right there. So right next door in Hartford, there's a Empower Summer Camp, and they serve a lot of kids from Bertie County. They operate for youth who have a developmental disability or traumatic brain injury. So those are just a couple of things that affect Bertie County. So for people who actually got services, so people served from Bertie, and this is from July until December, was 502 people, and that just shows the breakdown. The majority was mental health, then 111 for substance use, and 76 for developmental disabilities. Just information on how people can reach us. We have our member line that's open Monday through Saturday, 7 to 6. We also have a 24-hour-a-day crisis line that is staffed by clinicians. So if you call in the middle of the night, a licensed clinician answers the phone. We have that 24 hours a day. And that's all I've got. It wasn't 3 minutes, but I tried.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any questions?
I do like the growth that y'all have. Y'all making a lot of growth here in the state, especially adding on the other counties. And you're so right. You go to Terrell County, many people. Pad County, no people. You know, so there's a lot of land there.
It is.
So
most of our funding comes from Medicaid. That is our largest funder. We receive Medicaid dollars, and in turn we pay providers to serve people who have Medicaid who fall on the tailored plan under us. We get a little bit of funding called single stream funding from the state. That's what we use to serve people who have no health insurance. We do watch that closely. Those funds are not entitlements. So Medicaid services are entitlements. Our state funds are not. And so sometimes those run out. So that's something we do watch very closely.
The Medicaid issue that's being talked about in the state, that would come to us.
It would.
Mm-hmm. What type of, major stuff.
So when we had Medicaid expansion, there were 600 and some thousand people in North Carolina who got Medicaid. I can't speculate how many fall on the tailored plan. What that means is North Carolinians won't have health insurance. And that's, nobody wants that. For us, a lot of people, when they got Medicaid, they stopped receiving services through state funds, and so those funds were able to be used on more people because some people became eligible for Medicaid. I don't know the exact percentage that we got from expansion, though.
As always, Ms. Myers, it's a pleasure. Hearing reports from the community for everything that you do, especially dealing with this rising behavioral health issue. We can't appreciate truly enough all that you do.
Well, we appreciate all the support from Bertie for sure.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you so much.
The last thing I do want to just drop one more thing is we do a lot of community training. So we do mental health first aid for free. We do that for youth, we do that for adult, we do the question persuade refer suicide training. All those things are of no cost. So if you have church groups, agencies, anyone who might be interested in those trainings, please reach out. We want to bring those into the community. We do the CIT for our sheriff's department, EMS, anyone, we want to do those. But the more better trained our community is, the better we can respond to people.
Thank you so much.
I'll stop by.
Okay. Now, this time we'll have Sheriff's Office update. Sheriff, turn on the button. Look like a shop there, Sheriff.
Sheriff can't be half stepping. Good evening. I won't be before you long. I'm going to cut some of the things that I had down because I do have another meeting this afternoon. I will leave my deputies here for you, okay? I like to always introduce our new staff that come to Bertie County so that you know who they are, that you would know who they are, and they would know who you are, so they won't be messing with my commissioners and the citizens. Start off with Jacob Parker. Jacob Parker is one of our newest lieutenants to the Bertie County Sheriff's Office. He come to Bertie County from Hertford County with 11 years of law enforcement service, prior military experience. He was a prior K-9 officer of Hertford County Sheriff's Office, bring lots of training to the Bertie County Sheriff's Office, and we're glad to have him to be a part of our team. Okay, next will be Lieutenant Ryan Soria. Lieutenant Ryan Soria, he comes to us with, I believe, 13 years of experience? 11 years. 10.
Right,
okay, 11 years of experience also. Lieutenant Ryan Soria comes from Pasquotank County Sheriff's Office. And a few years ago, I believe that, I don't think it was the start of his career, but Lieutenant Soria did some time here in Bertie County in 2019. So he's back home.
That's right.
And so he has been brought in as a lieutenant of patrol. 11 years of service. He is a North Carolina general instructor. He have all type of trainers that I can't even name it. And so we're glad to have Lieutenant Ryan Sawyer to come and be a part of the Berkeley County Sheriff's Office. Thank you. And next I would like to call Deputy Danielle Melton. Deputy Danielle Melton is one that I introduced to you all about 2 months ago at the meeting, and we're going to give her the nickname of Smiley. And so Deputy Melton and her brother, you remember it was the brother and the sister. And so since the brother and sister have started, they've been in field training and kind of got on their own. And tonight I want to present to Deputy Danielle Melton a life-saving certificate to her in front of the citizens of Berkeley County and our commission. On April the 3rd, 2025, the deputies were dispatched to Highway 305 in Orlando in reference to an unresponsive person sitting in a vehicle in the roadway. Deputy Melton was the first to arrive on the scene and found the person unresponsive and the doors were locked. Once she noticed that the doors was locked, she retrieved her unlocking device out of the vehicle, made contact with the person, and noticed that there was evidence of drug use in the vehicle. Deputy Melton quickly retrieved her Narcan and administered it to the victim, administered to him, and before EMS and other responders had got there, he had been revived. But I believe through knocking on the window, through banging on the window, there was no response. So he was right there to be and out. So we want to congratulate her with a life-saving certificate tonight. This acknowledges that Danielle Melton has been recognized for outstanding achievements and for your selfless and heroic acts on April the 3rd, 2025. Your personal efforts of performing medical aid played an integral part in saving a life. Your willingness to act in a calm and competent manner prior to arrival of EMS personnel positively impacted our community. Your courageous actions are an exemplary model for others to follow. From the Berkeley Family Sheriff's Office, thank you for your service. Let's give a hand. Okay, keep up the good work. I'm going to cut most of this short real quick, but I do just want to talk about a few seconds about Berkeley County and some of the strategies that we have been doing in Berkeley County to keep the citizens safe. One of the things I would say is that I'm very proud of the men and women of Berkeley County Sheriff's Office and the work that they do. I would say that because of their proactive work, our great partnerships, and the community and our involvement in our community, we have been able to reduce violent crimes in Berkeley from 2023 to present. Thankfully, there has been a significant decrease in our violent shootings. We have seen a decrease in our overdose calls, and we are also seeing a continuous decrease in our breaking and entering and lawsuit reports. Last year in November, our office took a progressive approach to the gaming machines in our county. What had happened was these gaming machines in every county were shut down. So what happened was they all began to migrate to Berkeley County. And so by migrating to Berkeley County, we were dealing with the other counties' drug problems, their gangbangers. We had to deal with it. So I made the decision in November of last year to shut the gaming machines down. And for the most part, most of them have been in compliance, and if we have heard what they have been trying to do, there's got to be some money in this stuff. What they've been trying to do is they will go to a location where we haven't delivered a letter to. And so I've made it clear to these people now, if you open this gang machine, I'm going to come in and we're going to make some arrests and seize your machines until the General Assembly changes something. Right now, they are considered to be deemed illegal. The other thing is that this year, I met with my command about 2 weeks ago, is that we are targeting some tobacco stores. And we're targeting tobacco stores because the tobacco stores are targeting our children, because they know that these children will be long-term customers, longer than probably most of us. So these tobacco stores are starting to target our children. It's sad that we have found some, we have found some vapes in our elementary schools that we have been able to seize. And so last year, at the end of 2024, also, Berkeley County Sheriff's Office conducted search warrants on some of these tobacco stores. We were able to seize counterfeit items that are targeted to our children. And a week ago, matter of fact, was it last week on Tuesday, we had swore in one of our investigators with the Secretary of State, Elaine Marshall, under the Anti-Counterfeit Task Force to target these tobacco stores. If they are legal, we allow them to sell what they can sell legal, but a lot of this stuff that they are selling is counterfeit and is targeted to our children. And so we're taking a proactive stance on that. And I'll cut it short here, but I do like to say that the last time I spoke with you that I spoke with you about a canine that we received free of charge to the county, and the training is free of charge. Sergeant Deshaun Bazell has been assigned to that K-9, and he is already starting the training. A few weeks ago, they went to Tennessee and picked the K-9 up, and they're back. And we're going to cut it short there. Just a few things that I wanted to share with you on some updates, okay?
Thanks.
And thank you so much.
Thanks, Sheriff, for all you do, man. Sheriff, just before you go, I'd just like to say I want to commend you for being an outstanding sheriff. In case people don't know, you're one of the most well-known sheriffs in the state of North Carolina.
It's the hats.
It's the hats.
Yeah.
And if you all follow social media, now you have other sheriffs all over the state wearing hats. I just wanted to commend you publicly. And I do want to also let the public know that nobody is exempt from crime, because his deputies even stopped the chairman for one headlight. So, but I just wanted to tell you, keep up the good work. You're doing an outstanding job. Okay?
That's right, Sheriff. You're men too, because they stopped me for speed.
Thank you very much.
Not the time right now, buddy. All right. At this time, we have item number 8. We will call Mr. Tom Terrell on behalf of Sunlight Solar.
How you doing, Mr. Chairman? Yes, sir. Board. Appreciate you making some accommodation for us. Now, first of all, my sheriff, Danny Rogers in Guilford County, has been a copycat. He started wearing a hat because of Sheriff Rogers. And I want you to know that.
Yes, sir.
I'm a zoning and land use attorney and based in Greensboro, but I have been in almost every corner of North Carolina, been in 87 of our state's 100 counties. Berkeley County, I've already been in, is about 15-ish years ago. I got a couple of cell towers approved here, and it's good to be back.
Yes, sir.
Tonight, I'm here representing Sumac Solar. Sumac is represented by Ms. Carrie Hopper and Laura Precourt. Now, I don't know when the last time it was somebody flew down from Minnesota to be with y'all, but they are here for 3 minutes to be here as I make a very short presentation to you. It's that important to me.
Okay.
Let me tell you a little bit about Sumac and a brief report. Sumac is an 80-megawatt solar farm. It's at the corner of Warning and Woodard Roads. This project has been under development for 8 years. You may think that's a long time, but larger solar farms, that horizon just keeps getting longer. It's a Dominion Energy project, and it was originally started by GMETS. These ladies company, EDF, purchased it. Can't tell you the exact number, but it was many millions of dollars to purchase the project. It is an 80-megawatt solar farm, which is enough power to power 20,000 average-size homes. That's at the rule of thumb of 250 homes per megawatt. It is fully leased. You have five property owners in your county who have been receiving regular lease payments for 8 years while they've still gone about their business of farming. Right. It's been a pretty lucrative deal right there. It has been approved by the North Carolina Utility Commission. That is not a short process. They have done all of the environmental tests and due diligence, and we're here to let you know they have now finally gotten a green light from Dominion Energy. Typically, it's a little bit shorter time frame to get to this point, but this is they've gotten here, which means that they are now in that phase where they're going to start purchasing the equipment, the panels, entering into contracts. But to be clear, when they say it's a green light, it's not a green light to start in June. It's a 2027 time period. You go into what is called the queue or their program. And this is all projects have to go through this. As part of that, and this is a little bit unusual because Bertie County is one of the few counties that has not had zoning in this part of the county. There was no permit, like a special use permit, so it was approved simply by them starting the process. And the real green light is when they come in and get a building permit. In this case, they have had to spend many, many, many millions of dollars just to get to that point. So we're going to be asking your planning director for a simple letter that acknowledges what is called common law vesting, which means that you've spent substantial money in good faith reliance on whatever process existed. And we'll be working with Ms. White on that. We have already been in substantial communication with Mr. Smith, as well. But that's an administrative that we with that.
What size farm is
it? It's an 80 megawatt. The actual size to accommodate that is about 1,000 acres. Now, the lease area is, but that's the amount it takes.
So I had a question today. I was lucky enough to meet these two ladies earlier today. And so I can't figure out, what's the benefit to Bertie County?
Bertie County has already been benefiting from solar. When Dominion purchases this energy and puts it up on the grid, they enter into what's called a power purchase agreement. That power purchase agreement is a flat cost. It is a flat cost per megawatt that goes along sometimes for 3 or 4 years, or 5 years, and then there's an increase based upon cost of living adjustment. But sunlight is free. So Sumac Solar knows exactly what its energy, well, pretty close, what its energy production cost is going to be. So they know pretty precisely how much they can sell it to Dominion at a fixed amount. Dominion then is able to do its pricing knowing that the amount of its energy on the grid coming from this project is a flat amount. Whereas in other types of conventional energy, whether it's gas, nuclear, coal, or whatever, those costs go up, they go down, and they're at the mercy of foreign markets, interest rates, a wide variety of production factors. It's actually, I've been doing this now for a little over 15 years. I can't understand all of the many different factors that go into the pricing of the conventional types of energy. But with this, you can. You have been getting those protected level calls because you've been taking energy off of the grid from solar farms not even in your county. Now, I don't know how many are in this county, but you've been benefiting from all of those because all costs in eastern North Carolina have been levelized and kept from going up and spiking.
So maybe my question wasn't clear. I'm sorry, but you did bring another point I'm going to ask in a minute. Sure. My question is, how will Burke T. County, the government, how will we make money? That's my question.
Okay. There we go. You now have, actually, I'm going to give you two numbers. There's a larger number that is the total lease amount that is, although it's in the lease area, it stays in agriculture. So I don't know what happens to the agricultural exemption, but for the 1,000 acres that's here, mm-hmm. the value of that land goes up substantially. And this is I want to clarify this. There is no abatement to the ad valorem tax. It is a 100% tax paid on the dirt. Now, panels and the equipment is under a state mandated abatement, and you're probably
that's why it's 20%.
That's right. That's exactly.
So that's what I'm saying. We're not. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I never asked for that. That's about to change. There's a bill right now before the North Carolina legislature that changes that so that it's full amount on the equipment. And if that's the case, it's 100% on the equipment, but it's already 100% substantial increase. So you get a 3-year rollback on the property tax, the ad valorem taxes. You have all the taxes going forward not paid by your landowners, but paid by this company right here. And you're being paid a substantial amount more. It's an average on the land of about 2,000% more on those acres when you're out of ag exemption. You don't have to provide services for this project. Now, in theory, there is a fire truck that might have to go out there in some theory. There could be an ambulance that would have to go out for a worker during the construction. But for the most part, it's there are no services. You don't have to have sheriffs patrolling. You don't have to produce more schools it's not creating any children. You know, so you're getting money, but you're not having to do services. Kind of like a cell tower. You know, in theory, you know, somebody could fall from a cell tower and you got to have an ambulance out there for a trip. But for the most part, it's just an increase in your taxes with no service.
But not a big increase, just 20%.
No, it's on average. There have been two different studies that have, both of them came out to about the same, where they took the land the year of the value of the amount paid to the county. The year before its evaluation went up for the solar farm compared to the year after. That increase is about 2,000%. Now, the equipment is 100% of the value of the equipment minus 80%. So if that equipment is worth, let's say, $30 million, and how much approximately for all the substation, for the inverters, what would that cost be? 30. So it'd be about $30 million minus 80%. So you're getting, right now, you're not getting, I don't do math quick enough.
That'd be $6 million, 20% of $30 million, $6 million.
So you're getting tax on $6 million of equipment that you're not getting.
Every year.
Every single year for the life of this project.
I would like to see it. But all right, so my next question that I asked the ladies today.
Yeah.
Point of sale. All right, so, and the reason I ask is because we had dealt with this with the gas. So where's the point of sale for the electricity that's been collected?
This is a very complex question, and I'm not fully qualified to answer, but I'm going to tell you. There is no point of sale. There is a point of distribution. And the point of distribution is at the power station, the substation that is on the site. You're laughing. I don't know what.
Here's my question, and here's why the question.
Okay.
All right, because Sumac is not collecting this energy for free. They're not giving it to Dominion for free.
Oh, that's correct. There's a power purchase agreement. That's correct.
So they're selling it. So somewhere there's tax being done on this, right? There's got to be a sales tax. So that's why I'm asking where the point of sale is, because if it's in Burke T. County, then we should be getting that tax money. But if you're collecting it in Burke T. County, it's here. We're sourcing it out or whatnot. Like, that's my question today is Minnesota, Missouri, Wisconsin, Minnesota. Is Minnesota getting the sales tax? Because
it would not be Minnesota. It would have to, the bottom line is I don't know the answer to your question, but your tax supervisorship, that is a very determinable answer, because there are over, 1,200 or more solar farms in North Carolina of various sizes, and in probably just about every case. So that answer is determined.
Okay,
let me ask the manager, is Jody still online? Maybe he can answer that question for us.
It does not look like it, but I'll make sure he gets the question.
Yeah.
Make sure he gets the question. Mm-hmm. Okay.
But to be clear, we're not asking permission to get started. This project already has started under the laws that existed. We're just doing report. We're going to ask for affirmation that is protected, vested because of the many millions. But we do want you to know that it's proceeding.
Have there been a contract between Sumax and Duke Energy Company?
Dominion. Not
Dominion.
Yes.
There's a contract between them.
Oh yes.
Okay.
Oh yeah. You don't.
How long is the term of the project?
Is the projects are typically 40 years.
40.
You have a 20-year lease. It's the act. You have a 20-year lease. Then you have four or five-year extensions. So it's 40 years. Now I don't know. Is that about right? This for this project.
So this land is being leased, not purchased, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Now, what's the fix? What's the fix after the term of the lease? How would the land be reverted back to agriculture use?
It's the commercial.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, what method would you use to dismission the property?
May I answer that?
Yeah.
There's a standard way. The solar engine, utility scale solar, is so new that there have only been a few plants in the country that have moved to what is called decommissioning or removal.
Right.
But the process is very simple. While it might take 12 or 13 months to construct this facility, you have panels that are bolted onto what are called racks or just steel frames.
Right.
You just unbolt them, you lift the panels off, those panels are recycled, they often go to secondary markets, or in another country. You then have, I don't know if any of you are farmers, but as I grew up, we would take a tractor to pull a fence post up, and you put that hydraulic arm around that fence post, wrap a chain, and it pulls it right up. They have equipment that essentially does just that. You remove the wires, you remove the fencing. Just about every single thing in that facility is recycled. In fact, most of it is it's glass and plastic. But you also have some parts of those panels they're very valuable for recycling, and the recycling markets on that have actually increased. So it's typical for the cost of decommissioning to come close to being met just on the recycling value. Even the shrubbery planted around the exterior at some technical level, that's recyclable if you wanted to remove that. The fencing, that's recyclable.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. Can I ask one question?
Yes, ma'am.
I kind of want to backtrack. You said that you needed some assistance from our planner, from Ms. White, or you've already had assistance?
She is aware of it. We have sent a letter where we outlined the millions of dollars that have been spent, mm-hmm. and we just, in fact, provided a sample letter. I had done probably in counties across North Carolina who were just caught in that lengthy process from initial start to when they can actually break ground. And they just need that confirmation that they are vested and they have not lost those millions of dollars. Every single place we have gone through has agreed, except for one. And in that case, the judge overturned their decision, and that was in Cleveland County.
Ms. County Manager, have you seen that letter and reviewed it as of yet?
No, I have not.
Okay. Well, once you review it, could you please pass on your recommendation to us?
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
He will have it before I leave for him tonight. But your attorney and Ms. White have copies.
Again, that's our Capitano right there. So until he tells us to move forward.
I enjoyed meeting him when I came in the room.
So my last question. It's up and running in 2027?
2028.
So in 2028-29, we could see the first $6 million flow through.
And that's the value on which tax is paid. But yes, that is when, actually, I believe it's before that, but I am not, I'm on managed taxing aspect, but I think it's actually before that.
Okay.
Your tax supervisor would have that answer.
Okay.
Thank you.
If I may hand this to you. Mm-hmm. Thank you all for your time. We appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. That concludes our reports and appointments. We will now prepare ourselves to move into our board appointments. Number one, we'll be starting off with the Martin Community College Board of Trustees.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to nominate Dr. Michael White and LC Commissioner LC Holland, those two appointments.
Okay. We have a nomination of Dr. Michael White and Vice Chairman Holland. Any discussion? Okay.
Yeah, I'm good.
Well, I guess we'll go ahead and make a motion. Put a motion on the floor.
I made a motion. Need a second.
Okay. Commissioner Robinson has made a motion to appoint Dr. Michael White and Vice Chair L.C. Hoggett to Martin Community College Board of Trustees. All in favor, let it be known by saying aye. Mm-hmm. Aye. All opposed, nay?
Yeah, second.
Second.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'll second it.
Second by Commissioner Saunders. I'm sorry. Forgive me for that.
Make a correction, Commissioner.
All right. All in favor, let it be known by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, nay? Congratulations, Dr. White and Vice Chair Parker. Now we'll move to the consent agenda. Proclamation recognizing May 4th through May 10th, 2025, as clerk to the board of the county commissions week. Commissioners week. Do we have a motion on the floor?
I make that motion.
We have a second.
Second.
Let me retract that. Any discussion? Sound like that.
No. I just thought we'd read. I'm sorry. Read it. Read that's it. What I was saying. Oh, yeah.
What's the part about the check?
Bertie County Board of Commissioners proclamation recognizing May 4th through May 10th, 2025, as clerk to the boards of County Commissioners Week. Whereas the role of the clerk to the board of the County Commissioners is crucial for maintaining an informed community
and facilitating effective local governance through communication among citizens, governing bodies, and administrative departments. And whereas the position of the clerk to the board, one of the oldest in local government, continues to be essential as the official record keeper of their counties, with responsibilities that are deeply rooted in history. And whereas North Carolina General Statute 153A-111 requires every board of county commissioners to appoint or designate a clerk to the board to perform any duties that may be required by law or the Board of Commissioners, including but not limited to preparation, filing, and protection of local government records, which are vital for accountability and transparency. And whereas the clerk to the board enhances their professional skills through active participation in the North Carolina Association of County Clerks to the Board of Commissioners, which in partnership with the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill School of Government and the International Institute of Municipal Clerks offers nationally recognized certification programs and continuous professional education. And where is the clerk to the board, through their dedication to professional development, not only improve the efficacy, thank you, Dr. White,
I got you.
of their offices, but also bring positive recognition to their counties by participating in advanced education and obtaining profession-related certifications. Now, therefore, be it proclaimed by the Bertie County Board of Commissioners that May 4th through May 10th, 2025, will be recognized as Clerk to the Board of County Commissioners Week in Bertie County, and extends its appreciation to Clerk to the Board, Tanya R. Davis, and to all county clerks for the vital services they perform and their exemplary dedication to the county they represent. Adopted this 5th day of May, 2025. Do we have a motion?
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion by Commissioner Saunders to accept the proclamation. Second by Commissioner White. All in favor, let it be known by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, nay. So moved.
Thank you for all you do. You're amazing.
Congratulations.
That's a good team.
All right. Next, we'll have approved February 24th, 2025 work session minutes.
I move we approve the February 24th, 2025 work session minutes.
Second.
Okay. We have a motion by Commissioner White, second by Commissioner Saunders. All in favor, let it be known by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed, nay. So moved. Next, we'll have approved March 17th, 2025 work session minutes.
I move we approve the March 17th, 2025 work session minutes.
Second.
We have a motion by Commissioner Mike White, followed by Vice Chairman Hoggett, to approve the March 17, 2025 work session minutes. All in favor, let it be known by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, nay. So moved. Approve the March 2025 Register of Deeds Fees Report.
I move we approve the March 2025 Register of Deeds Fees and Report.
Do we have a second? Okay, we have a motion on the floor to approve the March 2025 Register of Deeds Fees and Report by Commissioner Michael White, second by Commissioner Robinson. All in favor, let it be known by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Next, we will have the approval of the basketball court construction contract.
So moved. Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, I didn't know he was coming to present either. I'm sorry.
I didn't know you were going to present it.
I didn't know you were coming.
Good afternoon. So, at the last meeting, you gave me the authorization to go ahead and work on the contract with Sports Court. Can't even say it anymore. Anyway, we worked with through them. I sent them a copy of the contract. The contract states that they'll do the project with the composite flooring and the have roles in the compository at the recreation center for cost not to exceed $100,000. They sent us the contract just a few minutes ago, so we actually have a signed contract from them. And I think Jonathan would do anything to do it.
Well, I'll just say that David sent it to me and I reviewed it. There were with Sport Court Carolina Inc. it had Sport Court Carolina, didn't have the ink. So, you know, I suggest to put the ink there because Secretary of State website has them listed with the ink. So let's do the ink. So we'd be sure that we're contracting with exactly the right entity. And then there was a little, I had two changes, either two little provisions either needed to be changed or taken out. David took them out. Apparently the company has approved that. And the last thing was just more of a comment, or I guess maybe a question, that under the termination provision, in other words, I pointed something out. David said, why don't you just address the commissioners about this? Paragraph 8 on termination, 8.2 says termination for convenience. You know, most any contract allows for termination if the other party breaches. This has that. But it also has an 8.2 paragraph that's termination for convenience. So either party can terminate without cause with 30 days notice. That's how it's written. So I just said, well, David, we should point this out to the commissioners. They may be fine with that. I mean, that allows the county to get out if it wants to. But be aware, it's bilateral. It allows the basketball people to get out 30 days notice if they want to. Your options are take that out, where the only way anybody can get out is if they breach, is if the non-breaching party can have their options to stop it and go through their remedies. Or one is to take it out so that the only way to, there is no without cause. The other way is keep the without cause paragraph in there, but instead of making it 30 days, make it 90, make it 120, or, you know, depending on the length of the contract, you could make it.
Just to point out, the contract is only for 120 days.
Okay.
That's the total. Once they start, they only have 120 days to get it
done. I think we should take it out. I mean, this decision of the board, but I think we should just take it out altogether.
Okay.
That's what do you all think?
Well, it depends on how they draw. You know, how the money is drawn down to pay the people, the contractor. You know, but 120 days is fine by me, but, you know, some, for the project to be completed. But the deal is, if you pay the contractor the bulk of the money and he pull out, so that's a problem.
That's the way the contract is set up also is that they put 50% down and 50% after the end of the once the contract is taken.
When the final inspection. Okay.
Let's take it out.
Yeah.
They can get 50 and walk away. That's what it sounds like to me.
Yeah. I mean, that would be my recommendation.
Yeah, just take it out. Kind of like say, you know, they get 50% of the money.
That's fine. I'll get with them tomorrow and let them know that we're going to take that piece of it out.
Because it has to be a reason for a contract that is a legal job.
So yes, sir.
It has to be a reason.
Approve it pending the taking that contract out. Okay. If we have any problems, I'll make sure we bring it back to the
meeting. Okay. That sounds fine, Jonathan?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Can we get a motion to approve?
I will make a motion to approve the basketball contract pending the removal of said paragraph 8.2 paragraph from the contract.
Got a motion by Commissioner Saunders, second by Commissioner Robinson to remove paragraph 8.2 of the agreement. All in favor, let it be known by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed, nay.
Thank you.
Okay. Other items. It's time for us to discuss the meeting dates. And the meeting dates we have available will be, well, I think we have up here May the 19th, 2025. Y'all have your calendars. June the 2nd. 2025, June the 16th, and July the 14th.
Chairman,
if I may explain. The dates listed here are already meetings that are scheduled. However, there were some conflicts that I think the board needed to discuss and consider. First one being the next scheduled work session is May 19th, but from my understanding, that is when I plan to present my budget presentation, my proposed budget, I should say. The superintendent had planned to present his as well, but there has been a request for me to present my budget sooner. So it's before you all to decide on a date sooner than May 19th. That works for you all.
Okay. Is everyone looking at the week of May the 12th? The week of May the 12th, any evening that week, I'll be fine.
Okay, and just this was a work. A day meeting. It was supposed to be at 10, but again, the board can change it if you would like to.
Okay, well, we can stick with 10. Stick with 10. Okay. Just pick a date that you think you'll be ready for us during the week of the 12th.
12th work?
No.
We're only a week away. My preference is we need is as much time as we can get. So if the latest that you all, how late are you able to do it that week?
Well, Wednesday work for you? Wednesday work for
you? Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I'm good with Wednesday the 14th.
10 o'clock.
Okay. Wednesday. May 14th, 10 o'clock?
May 14th, 10 o'clock. Can't give a break.
Do you prefer to be here for that work session or at the community meeting room?
Based on the load, we'll allow you to make that decision.
Okay.
Based on the
load. We'll keep it here because we're not certain it's the right. We'll keep it here.
Okay. 10 o'clock.
Yes, sir. The meeting scheduled for June 2nd. Conflicts with the conference, the NOPCO conference, that some of you all will be attending. Yeah. So is there, well, while I'm there, also June 16th is the date of the public hearing. And so, but there's not a conflict with that. That's up here just for your information. But the June 2nd meeting is the conflict with the conference. So
okay, what time was the June 2nd meeting? That was the regular scheduled meeting. Mm-hmm.
Correct. At 6 o'clock. Not
correct.
I'm up in the night. I'm good. I'm good.
June 9th.
There you go. May 1st.
I mean,
May 10th.
That was regular
scheduled.
6 o'clock.
Yeah,
6 o'clock.
Okay. So we're going to change the June 2nd meeting to June 9th at 6 o'clock p.m. Commissioner's room. Okay. And then the next conflict that we have is the July 14th meeting conflicts with travel to NACO.
July 14th was 10 a.m. That's a 10 o'clock.
No, that's 6 o'clock also.
So was there a reason we didn't do it July 7th, the first Monday night? Or is it because of July 4th week?
I think that was the only reason, but sometimes, you know, you have travel because, again, it coincides, follows the, you know, holiday. But if everybody's going to be here, it's
Monday night.
Friday's a holiday for us.
Right.
So if everybody agrees to July 7th, it can be July 7th.
How's everybody scheduled July 7th? Mm-hmm. Is that you all's holiday weekend?
I mean, it's staff holiday weekend.
No, that's a Monday night. The staff is out Friday. That's what I said, it's Monday. It's not nobody's out.
All right, so let's go with 7th.
July 7th, 6 o'clock. Okay. Okay, I think that can addresses everything needed. If we can have a motion to update the commissioner's meeting calendar to reflect these dates
again.
Yes. So we're changing the May 19th work session to May 14th at 10 o'clock a.m. in the commissioner's room. We're changing the June 2nd, 6 o'clock meeting to June 9th at 6 o'clock in the commissioner's room. And we're changing the July 14th meeting at 6 o'clock to July 7th at 6 o'clock in the commissioner's room.
And what time is the public hearing?
The public hearing should be at 6 also.
14th, May, 9th of June, and the 7th of July.
Correct, but please don't forget, excuse me, you know what, the I misspoke. The June 16th is the regular meeting. The actual public hearing that conflicts with NOPCO was the public hearing. Yes. And now we're changing that to June 9th. So the public hearing will be changed from June 2nd to June 9th. And the June 16th meeting is the regular meeting. Our both of them start at 6 o'clock.
So what's the 9th then?
Public hearing. Where the public comes in and inspects the proposed budget, can take a look right at it, I'll discuss it, and if any feedback the public has, okay, we'll consider that feedback before you actually approve the budget.
So 6-9, then 6-16, June?
Yes.
Okay.
So public hearing will go from June 2nd to June 9th.
Gotcha.
So I'm going to pray that we don't have a time like last year, mm-hmm, but do we not need some days in June just in case, like, to look at a calendar?
So we usually do that when the budget is presented. So when I present the budget on May 14th, usually immediately following that, we discuss times to have our budget work sessions, and we usually schedule at least two or three on that day. So on May 14th, we can confirm the work session, unless you all are ready to do it.
No, well, hold on. The 9th was when public comes in. So what's June 16th? I'm sorry.
The regular meeting. So during the public hearing, that meeting is just set aside only for the budget, for the public to provide feedback on the proposed budget.
Gotcha.
Okay. All right. So with the changes of the dates made for meetings and public hearing, I need a motion on the floor to accept the changes made.
I'll make that motion to accept changes made to the meeting dates.
Second.
We have a motion by Vice Chairman Hoggart, second by Commissioner Robinson, of the changing of the dates. All in favor, let it be known by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Next, we will have the status of the bid process for property on 1008 North King Street, Windsor, North Carolina.
Commissioners, as you are aware, we received a bid for the amount of $75,000 for the property located at 1008 North King Street. The board approved for us to move forward in that bid process, which included advertising first, accepting a deposit of 5% from the bidder. Next, we put the advertisement in the paper, letting the public know that it was available for upset bid. The public had 10 days to upset that bid, which technically ended today at 5 o'clock p.m., I have received no upset bids. I'm sure the bidder will be happy about that. At this point, the board, what we will need in order to move forward, we'll need an official vote from the board to accept the bid of $75,000, and then we can move forward with deed preparation and the transfer of the property to the bidder.
Correct. Yeah. I move that we accept the bid of $75,000 for 1008 North King Street, Windsor, North Carolina.
Second.
Okay. We have a motion to accept the bid put in place for 1008 North King Street, Windsor, North Carolina, by Commissioner White, second by Commissioner Saunders. All in favor, let it be known by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed, nay. Next, animal shelter update. Yes.
It's me again.
That's
okay, I'm going to try and not be too confusing with this. First thing I want to talk to you about is the existing animal shelter contract that we have with DWG Architect, Bill Daggett, the gentleman who did the work for it. I've talked to Juan, and I'd like to, the contract officially ended in December, so we don't have a contract with them anymore, but I want to make sure that I have everybody's consent in the fact that we're not going to move forward with looking at building the or trying to design one similar to the Terrell County site that we're going to use, that we were going to use him for, which was going to cost an additional $48,000. We were going to have to do a new contract with him. I'd like to just, he calls me regularly to see how, you know, where we are and how we're progressing. I'd just like a consensus, or y'all telling me we're not moving forward with that anymore, so I can kind of let him know that thank you for what he's done for us, but we're kind of done with that.
Do we get any additional money that I don't know about?
No.
All right.
But I can't just do that on my own. I have to have direction.
I understand that. I'm just asking to make sure before I say anything out loud that we didn't get money that I don't know about.
Any additional funding?
Okay.
All right. You have a decision to make. Do we end that agreement with what's the name?
I'm not suggesting that we're ending the thought process of an animal shelter. I'm just suggesting that we let DWG architect know that we will not be moving forward with the next phase or updating the contract. Okay. Anything has to be a vote because if the contract already extended, right? I mean, it's over, so I just need a consensus from you saying we're not doing anything, so I can let him know.
All right. That being said, we just need a motion to.
I'll make the motion that
I just think you need a consensus. We just need to say we're good with moving on, okay. Moving away from
it. We're good. We're good with moving on.
Okay. That's the first piece. The second piece was you asked me to get some information on what it would take to kind of bring the existing shelter up to some type of condition that we could state it could do for a little while. After talking to the state inspector and working with our maintenance director, Anthony Roscoe, we came up with a couple of figures. I'm not going to go through all the different pieces, but basically, in order to get the fencing, we need to replace all the fencing because that's what keeps rusting and we have to keep doing it and repainting it and sanding it down. That's a big piece of it. There are two different options. We can just replace the fencing with same kind of fencing, and then we're going to have the same problem in about 2 years. That's roughly $16,000 to do that piece of it. And then if we were to do a more permanent solution, it would be putting in chain link fence that has the vinyl coating on it and the vinyl pulp, and basically tearing the whole thing out, putting new poles and new vinyl fencing in and the doors and such for that. That's roughly $45,000. So that's those two pieces. I also asked Anthony to give me a quote on what it would take to make the facility meet the ambient temperature for the animal shelter that it's supposed to have, which is between 55 degrees and 80 degrees year round. In order to do that, he got a quote for the heaters and some different kind of coverings for the walls and stuff. Would be another $9,000 to do that. And then I had not gotten a quote for the fans, but you know, getting some bigger fans in there to help out to probably another $1,000 or so. So we're looking at almost $26,000 for the least expensive effort, up to $53,000, almost $54,000 for the bigger fencing. Why not? I've talked about it, and you know, do we really want to spend that much money on doing that? All of that, it's kind of questionable. So I was introduced to a new type of building. And if Don Trent were here, he'd love it, because first thing I'm going to tell you, you have to build a concrete slab, and that's what he wanted to do to begin with. But that's the only part that's the same with the center. I'm going to give you some pictures. There are examples of these are not exactly what we're looking for. We'd have to do a lot of we'd have to do a bid process to contract it. But there are, I have been informed, actually Robin was looking at it for her building for the Colorado Water Project. There are companies out there that actually build prefab commercial kennels. I have talked to people in Greer, South Carolina, in Atlanta, in Arizona, and in California who are using products like this. I've talked to our state inspector, and she says that after her review and her looking into it, it appears that they will meet the AWA, which is the American Welfare Act, guidelines for a new building. And so I am going to be digging into that a little bit. I'm basically working on an RFP to get quotes, bids for that. This type of building with the concrete slab and the water and the electrical and everything will probably, and this is an estimate, it's not nowhere close, anywhere from $250,000 to $300,000, maybe a little bit more than that, to build this type of a shelter, which is, I won't say coincidentally, but it is what we have $400,000 sitting there right now that we've been used, so that helps. And so what I'm going to do is I'm developing a proposal to get out there to see if we can get some quotes back to find out what it would cost us to do that, and then I bring something back to you. So I would, it's my recommendation that we not spend the money to try and update the current shelter until such time we know whether or not we can do this.
I'll just say, if you hadn't had another option, that's what we were going to do.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to pass it back.
But and again, thank God you found another option. Yeah.
These are examples.
Thank you.
Type, and the last two examples on there are actual floor plans.
Because the last two presentations you gave us was 1.something million, and what was it? 900 and some thousand. Oh, that's nice. That's nice.
That's nice. All right.
So,
yes, sir. As it stands right now, I'm going to contact Bill tomorrow, let him know that. Thank you, but we're done that aspect of it. And then I will work on the bid proposal and get something out to see if we can't get some folks back to determine if this is something that we could do instead.
Dave, thank you. And the sooner you can get the bids back on these, you find those prices going up the roof.
Yes, sir. These are actually prefab, from what I'm seeing of these are prefab buildings that are made there on site and delivered to you and put down on a concrete slab that we have to put up first. So, but I don't think that'll be an issue. We have the property, we have it, everything else, so that's not going to be an issue.
Okay.
Any questions?
No, that's I'm. Thank you for coming up with that.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Councilman.
Yes, sir.
Quick question for you.
Proper way to handle this. What do you need for the
right. So at this time we will have a commissioner's report. Commissioner Robinson.
Mr. Chairman, on April the 28th, we had the opportunity to join Chief Justice Paul Martin Newby here, and they done a ribbon cutting open for the eCourts. eCourts is a system where you go online and basically pull up any information that is in the courthouse.
Good deal. All right. Vice Chairman?
I got a couple of things to talk with a few citizens. Francis Mill Road, Piney Woods Road, trash, blind off the trucks,
mm-hmm.
trash, people throwing in the ditch. So I would make mention of it, and I would talk with my DOT expert to the right of me, see what he can come up with. And I understand what they're saying. You know, it is terrible. Also, Roxville Keffer, you know, they have a housing development that's kind of going on up there. And they asked me to make mention as well so that citizens would know about it. And then, who was it? Used to be Parker, Bailey Parker. The store there, now it's Grandma's Kitchen, but no longer in use. And they're trying to, if you know of anyone who would be interested in going there and open it and putting up a little restaurant or something there.
This is in Roxville.
This is in Roxville, right there where across the street from the car wash, you know, for the, yeah.
Commissioner White, any reports?
I don't have any. Well, it's graduation season. We got Roanoke Chowan just had graduation last week. Martin has it this week. Next week, sorry. Bert T. Early College has it next week. Bert T. High School has it May 31st. There's a good chance you know somebody graduating. Congratulations.
Matter of fact, on the, what is it, the 8th, of, which is Thursday, Martin Community CCR program, they're going to be having their GED graduation as well. Oh. I think we have about 14, 15 students who will be receiving their general, what is it now? General Equivalency Diploma?
That right? Yeah, I got it right. Ooh. Yeah. Outstanding. Mr. Simon?
I'd like to congratulate Papa Parker. He's now granddaddy. I hope that would be the first thing you can tell your new grandparent. Man, you got to be able to jump right on there. But I had the honor of, I'm sorry that Pastor Ray had left. The Methodist Church is an old Methodist Chapel Church in Woodville in Berkshire County. It had not had service in 35 years. It's on historical register. Pastor Ray, I had the honor of speaking there for the last service and the first service they'd had in 35 years at the old Methodist Church. A couple came and bought the church and the cemetery, and they're going to convert it into a house. The house, the church is on the National Register. It was built in 1842. And so, I mean, it had the slave galley up at the top. I mean, it was just a beautiful service because it was a multicultural service. And you guys know in 1842, you could not have a multicultural service with everybody sitting in the vestibule. So it was a beautiful, beautiful service. It was a beautiful historical society came down. Raleigh, Miss Molly Urquhart was there. Just several people was there. It was a beautiful service. So if you get an opportunity to go in Woodville before they start the renovation, it's the old St. Francis Methodist Church, and it's in Woodville.
That's nice.
Okay.
I love that.
Thank you, Commissioner Saunders, and I have none at this time. With that being said, I'm going to call on the county manager.
Just a few community events, since that's what we're talking about this evening. On April 17th, a few of us attended the Mideast Commission's annual meeting, which was held, proud to say. We're able to host events like that now in our very own community meeting room at the Berkshire County Library and Cooperative Extension. And one of our local mayors, Mayor Gloria Bryant, is now serving as the president of the Mideast Commission. Last week, some staff and I, David Scarborough, Tanya Davis and I attended the Special Olympics. It was a joy to be there and witness the fun that students had. That was great, including walking a lap around the track with them, which is very nice, by the way. And then Saturday before last, of course, the NAACP had its Freedom Banquet, and I had the honor of introducing former Commissioner Mr. Ronald Wesson.
Yes. Thank you so much. And county attorney's reports, have any at this time?
No, sir, do not.
Okay. And just before we get ready to do the public comments, I would like to, something slipped my mind, I would like to applaud Mr. Barry Anderson on his retirement.
Yes.
From the county. Yes. He served how many years?
Oh, about 21.
21 years here.
Yes.
As our code enforcement officer.
Mm-hmm.
And he retired on last Wednesday.
Yes.
Correct?
That's correct.
So we want to congratulate him and wish him well on his retirement.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Chairman, for that.
At this time, we will open the floor again for public comments. Please keep in mind, 3 minutes.
I don't think he is.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to hear from Mon Community College.
Yes.
I heard from RCC.
It's the floor is open. Yes, ma'am. How you doing?
Hello, you all. Thank you for asking me to come up and speak.
Dr. Williams and I had spoke earlier. I knew that she was doing the presentation and everything, and so I came. I told her to support her, but then also to come to the commissioner meeting. Mark Community College is doing wonderful this year. We are actually up in enrollment 9%. We again have one of our largest graduating classes from Bertie Early College and Bertie High School. We're always excited about that. And so our graduation is May 16th. What I would like to do at one point, you know, I just hit my 1 year anniversary. So May 1st was my first year anniversary to be president of Martin Community College. One of the things that they always talk with you about is change the things you have to change, but otherwise just kind of sit back and watch and kind of listen and see what's going on and get the lay of the land and then move forward. And so I would really like to, and maybe in July or August, come to a meeting and give you all a status update and do, you know, something that will show you not just Bertie County, that would be included, but Martin Community College as a whole for the region and what we're doing for this region. Dr. Williams and I work very closely together because we truly believe that this is a regional approach to help our citizens and our students be the best that they can be so that we can grow our counties, strengthen our counties in all ways. And so we've been working very heavily together with the Bertie Attainment Coalition, but then also just in other ways. You know, our nursing program, MOA, is strong. She's got a solar program. We have a solar program. We've been working together on those pieces with curriculum and such, so that when the field gets built, we have the workers that can come in and do it. And so I'm excited to just be able to kind of come out and share with you all whatever you all would like me to share. So if you have ideas of some things that you would like to hear, shoot them my way. And that way, when I get a chance to do an official kind of state of Martin Community College for you, I give you not just the information I think is important, but also the information you need.
I commend you and the president of RCC for doing that nursing program together. Together, we can do so much more than,
very much,
you know, than trying to push each other apart and not having that unity that y'all need, mm-hmm, being right there, right beside each other. Mm-hmm.
And that was clear from the beginning. As soon as I became president, Dr. Williams called me and we started talking about how we could collaborate, what we could do to come together instead of push each other apart. So it has been wonderful. And she didn't mention it, but we just found out today that our first student who transferred from Martin Community College to the nursing program graduated at the graduation ceremony and won their highest award for academics. And so that kind of helped even more strengthen that collaboration, that our student excelled in their program, 100% pass rate, 100% pass rate. She didn't mention it, but on their tests as well, the state test,
state level,
100% pass rate for the state test. Nursing is nursing is nursing. No matter what institution you go to, there's a standard that has to be met,
right,
and there's a state test that has to be,
right,
passed,
right,
and her students 100% pass rate. Right. And so, you know, it's just been wonderful working with such a great program that they have as well.
I will say this, and I don't mean to prolong, but over a year ago, I was at the barbershop. And the maintenance guys were there getting a haircut on Sarah, guys work, mm-hmm, and they were saying, I sure hope she get that job. Oh, I sure hope she get that job. So that said a lot by you as a person. You know what I mean?
Thank
guys, I'm talking to guys, they said, that worked in the maintenance department, cutting grass and everything. And they said, I hope she get that job. Or she will speak to me. She will speak to me, you know.
It's
he's
important.
Speaking to the guys.
Yes, it's important. So my father was a maintenance worker all his life.
Yeah.
I was taught that every person is important because it's the JFK quote, right? Every person puts the man on the moon.
That's right.
No matter what their position is within NASA. And it's the same thing at an institute.
Yeah, but that means a lot. Man. You know, the guys say, man, sure hope she get that job, man.
Hopefully they're still saying that.
Right. We thank you. We really embrace Martin Community College.
Thank you.
My son graduated through their college program, so I'm
wonderful.
I'm definitely,
yeah,
grateful.
Thank you.
Yeah. Miles did too, and he's graduating again. My grandson in December,
with a degree in biology and pharmacy.
Wonderful.
Yeah. Wonderful. He got 2 degrees from early college, you know, when he graduated from early college in science, and then he went to ECU.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good. It's a great way to begin your education.
Yeah, sure.
You know.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
For your time.
Thank you.
Any more public comments?
Okay.
That's good. That's good.
Okay.
That's good stuff.
That's it. No more public comments? Anything from Joe? Any public comments? Or
no?
No. Okay. Well, at this time, I need a motion to go into closed session.
All right, I make a motion. I move we go into closed session pursuant to North Carolina General Statute 143-318.11A3(4)-6.
You heard the motion on the floor. I need a second.
Second.
Okay, we have a second by, we have a first by Commissioner Michael White, second by Commissioner Ron Robinson. All in favor to go in closed session, let it be known by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. We now go into, need a motion. Come out of closed session.
So move.
Got a motion to come out of closed session by Commissioner Saunders. Is that second?
Second.
Second by Commissioner Robinson. All in favor, let it be known by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. We are out of closed session. Joe at this time can bring anybody in the waiting area back.
Oh, we're here.
Did y'all know that Jonathan is a triathlete?
Yes.
Did y'all know that?
I did.
Did y'all? Yeah.
He used to train when he was on the YMCA train, board
swim,
together.
Bike.
Yeah.
Jump on him if you want to.
Yeah, I'm.
Yeah, he's good. Yeah.
What? We're back, huh? Just so everybody knows.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. I did one yesterday. Is that what you're talking about?
I didn't know you did one yesterday.
At this time, we are out of closed session. And I need a motion on the floor to adjourn.
So moved.
We have a motion on the floor to adjourn by Commissioner Sun, second by Commissioner Robinson. All in favor, let it be known by saying aye.
Aye.
Meeting's adjourned.